There's certainly, as we've talked about, there's all the stuff that seems to get pulled under this umbrella. So, kind of too general a question to answer.
Yeah, I think we've given, I think throughout the whole interview, we've given people a lot of paths that they can take for their own exploration.
Crow T Robot from Mystery Science Theater 3000 here on 90.7 WGXC. What's the C stand for? Crow, I'm pretty sure. Yep. Maybe not.
Inviting you to Mostly Singles, and if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time, and a podcast too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hey man, I haven't seen you around for a while. Where you been? Oh, you know, I just been woodshedding. Oh yeah, where's that? Oh, out in the woodshed. Oh, cool, dude, cool. What you working on? Oh, you want to check it out? Yeah, I got it on my mini disc player. Oh yeah, let me hear it.
Hello?
Yeah, that's something I've been working on out in the woodshed. Oh, yeah, I like that sound, man. Hold on, let me play you something I got on my new DAT. Yeah, it's a DAT player. I've been working on it outside in the garage. Hold on, let me get it for you. Okay, put your headphones into this magic. Oh, that sounds eerily similar, but I really like it. Yeah, hopefully we can play together sometime so we can gang up on some serious power chords. Like this one? What about this one? Yeah, I like that one. We'll see you around, man. Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday night from 10 p.m. till midnight. Tune in.
Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Joan Schumann of Watsonville, California. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Network, an empire upon an empire.
I make no promises.
You on the mark.
With one purpose only, to point out and make public the dishonesty, now in complete control of the government of this state.
There is only one man who can rid the politics of this state of the evil domination.
Hello.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that officials in Great Barrington are discussing renaming Squaw Road. Last week, the federal government announced that nearly 650 sites in the U.S. that formerly bore the word Squaw have been renamed. That includes the former Squaw Peak on Monument Mountain near Stockbridge, which was changed last year to Pescawasso Peak. The Squaw Swamp in Rensselaer County was renamed Black Swamp. The word Squaw is considered an offensive slur. Great Barrington Town Manager Mark Pruhinsky said residents of 17 out of 18 households along the road met this summer about the name change, and the select board will discuss the issue on October 3rd. Prohinsky said in an email, and I quote, "I think we'll be ready to move forward with a decision very soon now," end quote. In January, somebody shared the road sign for Squaw Road from its post. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Alex Galt reports for the Post Star that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik is one of 86 co-sponsors of the House version of the bill from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham to ban most abortions after 15 weeks nationwide. While local politicians have been promising abortion rights are safe in this state, the, and I quote, "Protecting Pain-Capable Unborn Children from Late-Term Abortions Act," end quote, if passed, would override state laws and ban abortions in New York. Current New York law permits abortions for viable pregnancies up to 24 weeks of age, although allows the medical procedure later if the health of the mother or fetus is at risk. A statement from Stefanik's advisor, Alex DeGrasse, said, and I quote, "Congresswoman Stefanik, a young mother, is pro-life with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. She strongly opposes taxpayer funding for abortions and supports the Hyde Amendment. Her constituents are proud of her long pro-life record throughout her time in Congress," end quote. The Hyde Amendment passed in Congress in 1977, banning federal funding for abortion except when the mother's life is in danger and can be saved with the procedure. Matt Costelli, running against Stefanik in the 21st Congressional District that will include Rensselaer County, disagrees. He said, and I quote, Elise Stefanik has put a target on the back of every woman in NY21 and threatens the health of millions of American women by taking away their freedoms. She continues to demonstrate that she is willing to sell out anyone for her own benefit, willing to deprive women of the right to make decisions about their own bodies, willing to threaten the lives of women, all to advance her own career. This dangerous and unconstitutional ban makes it clear that Elise Stefanik is unfit for leadership and wholly unfit to represent of New York 21, end quote. Read more about this story in the Post Star. Chris Bragg reports in the Times Union that the state of California paid 45% less than New York for the same COVID-19 test supplied by a donor to Governor Kathy Hochul. New York spent $637 million on the test from the New Jersey-based distributor Digital Gadgets, LLC. That is $286 million more than the price California was charged. Digital Gadgets, LLC is a company owned by a New York City family that has donated nearly $300,000 to Hochul's campaign. California bought the test directly from the manufacturer at $6.75 per test, while New York paid the distributor $12.25 per test. New York bought the test 3 weeks earlier than California during a shortage of tests that may explain some of the price disparity. Bill Hammond, Senior Fellow for Health Policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy, said, and I quote, "The price is just way off the map, and we still haven't heard anything close to a convincing explanation for why the price was so high and why the Hochul administration not only accepted a price that was so high, but made this their primary supplier. If the tests were being sold to another state at the same price, at a better price, New York should have been able to get something closer to that price, even if the state was snapping up the last tests available," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The impacts of colonialism outlive the British Queen. I am Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. It's long been said the sun never sets on the British Empire, referring to the United Kingdom's colonies around the globe. Will the death of Queen Elizabeth II trigger further shrinking of the empire, as former colonies now in the British Commonwealth debate whether to permanently sever ties? With its history of slavery, concentration camps, executions, and torture, what would reparations and accountability look like? On her 21st birthday in 1947, Elizabeth, 5 years before her coronation as queen, said,
"I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family, to which we all belong."
Elizabeth was in South Africa, a British Commonwealth nation, 1 year before its white minority imposed the racist policies of apartheid over the majority black and other non-white populations. Over the next half century, South Africa's apartheid regime, shored up by the United Kingdom and the United States, demonstrated not all in the Queen's imperial family fared well.
What I'd like to see is the dismantling of this notion of the Commonwealth.
That's Cornell University professor Mukoma Wangugi speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He was born in the U.S. but raised in Kenya, the son of the renowned Kenyan writer Ngugi Wa Thiong'o.
Commonwealth, whose wealth?
Ask Professor Mukoma Wangugi.
the book I'm working on now on Africans and African Americans took me to Keta in Ghana, right? Keta is where slaves were being taken from, right? And it's a very depressed, you know, the aftershocks, if you want to call it that, or the trauma of slavery still, it's evident, right? It's poor, depressed, and so on and so forth. Maya Angelou called it melancholic, actually, right? Then from there, I left Keta, then I went to Bristol in England, right? Bristol was a slave trading port where, you know, yeah, and it's thriving. It looks like a good old-fashioned bohemian town. Most people know it now because of the dismantling of the statue of Colston, who was one of the slave traders. But at any rate, we can see the effects of slavery, right? We can see the effects of colonialism, and we can see how the wealth of England was built.
In 1952, Elizabeth was in Kenya when she learned of the death of her father, King George VI, and became queen. Kenya suffered for decades under British colonial rule. An organized armed resistance rose up in the 1950s called the Mau Mau. Harvard historian Caroline Elkins documented Britain's violence against Kenyans in her Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Imperial Reckoning, The Untold Story of Britain's Gulag in Kenya.
Nearly 1.5 million Kikuyu, or Africans, were detained in detention camps or emergency villages, barbed wire villages, as a way of suppressing Mau Mau. This was a story about systematic violence, torture, murder, and massive cover-up. And the bottom line is that serious crimes happened on the Queen's Imperial Watch. In fact, her picture hung in every detention camp in Kenya as detainees were beaten in order to exact their loyalty to the British Crown.
Many nations still struggle with the impacts of British colonialism.
Formerly enslaved and colonized nations and people like those of the Caribbean, including Barbados, have been inserted in that international order in a structurally subordinate and exploitative manner.
David Comisyong is Barbados' ambassador to the Caribbean community. He was speaking on Democracy Now! Last December, just after Barbados severed its Commonwealth relationship with the UK, removing Queen Elizabeth as head of state and declaring itself sovereign.
Barbados was the first society in human history that was built totally on the basis of slavery, its economy, its social system, its ideology. And so that's our history. The royal family was deeply involved in the British slave trade and the system of African enslavement.
The Prime Minister of the Caribbean nation of Antigua and Barbuda, Gaston Brown, announced this week the country will hold a referendum within 3 years to decide on complete separation from the UK. Dobreen Omard, the chairperson of the Antigua and Barbuda Reparations Commission and an ambassador at large of Antigua, said this week on Democracy Now!
She has managed to cloak the historical brutality of empire in this veneer of grandeur and pomp and pageantry, I guess, graciousness. But I think that at this point in time, we need to examine that history a lot more closely.
Queen Elizabeth's eldest son has succeeded her and is now King Charles III. He'll be confronted with rising demands for accountability and reparations for the generations of colonial exploitation that enriched the United Kingdom and the royal family, himself included. The Windsor family's estimated wealth is in the billions of dollars.
The CARICOM Reparations Plan talks of development.
Again, that's Dobreen Omard, Ambassador at Large of Antigua.
Where the hurt of enslavement and genocide continues to exist and continues to impact on the lives of Caribbean people today. You have committed crimes against humanity, and that there is a moral and an ethical demand that you acknowledge these crimes.
King Charles III should heed the call of all these former colonial subjects and answer for the innumerable harms inflicted worldwide in the name of the British monarchy. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Here is this week's environmental news from WGXC. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more about these stories and others.
Marie J. French reports at Politico how efforts to build offshore wind turbines at the Port of Coymans and Port of Albany are being opposed by environmentalists. The Port of Coymans recently has been a maritime hub for construction debris from New York City, so it would seem environmentalists would support a shift to building offshore wind turbines. But environmentalists see the expansion of the ports as risky to the health of the Hudson River. Barbara Heinzen, a Coymans resident, said, and I quote, "We've had 20 years of creeping expansion," end quote. The 125-acre Port of Coymans is about 15 miles south of Albany, owned by Carver Companies, recently added an industrial park to the dismay of some neighbors. The Carver Company's businesses have been fined several times by the DEC for environmental violations, including a 2018 fine for illegally stored road salt at the port. The current expansion plans there would require dredging to increase the depth of the Hudson River and allow bigger ships to load and unload. That dredging will eliminate the potential habitat for the endangered sturgeon in the Hudson River. Carver wants to mitigate that loss by funding 1.8 acres of habitat restoration at the Skodak Island State Park across the river. On August 8th, the Department of Environmental Conservation concluded that all negative environmental impacts had been minimized and mitigated, and I quote, "to the maximum extent practicable," end quote. At the Port of Albany, the complaints are about the number of trees cut down for the port's expansion. John Lipscomb, Riverkeeper's boat captain, said, and I quote, "We seem to compromise our values. It's not about wind. It's not about politically popular projects," end quote. Read more about this story at Politico. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that on September 12th, Governor Kathy Hochul's office announced that the New York Power Authority was giving an Israeli firm a $1 million grant to develop fast-charging battery capabilities for electric vehicles. To phase out gas-fueled vehicles in New York, the state will need to have many fast-charging stations for cars and trucks throughout the state. Hochul said, and I quote, "Through key strategic partnerships, New York is driving the advancement of cutting-edge clean energy technologies that will have a global impact in the fight against climate change. New York's collaboration with the State of Israel, a hub for innovative clean energy technologies, will deliver forward-thinking solutions that will strengthen New York's EV infrastructure," end quote. While California has mandated that no fossil fuel-powered cars will be sold after 2035, New York has yet to announce a similar mandate. Read the full story at New York State of Politics. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union that the General Electric Company has agreed to conduct a study of possible PCB and other contaminations in the lower Hudson River from the Troy Dam to New York Harbor. The agreement was announced by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency on September 13th. New York parties, led by the Department of Environmental Commissioner Basil Sagos, as well as the Hudson Riverkeeper Group, have maintained that more studies, as well as additional dredging, will likely have to be done. GE has taken the position that its dredging was completed in 2015 when, following an agreement with the EPA, they removed approximately 2.5 million cubic yards of PCB-laden sediment from a 40-mile stretch of the river between Fort Edward and Troy. The contamination dates from the 1940s to the 1970s, when GE regularly discharged PCBs into the Hudson from its capacitor plants in Fort Edward and Hudson Falls. While it was legal to do so at the time, the dumping sparked worries about pollution, since PCB is now considered a probable carcinogen. Under the new agreement, GE will develop a plan for, and I quote, "extensive water, sediment, and fish sampling between the Troy Dam and the mouth of the Hudson Harbor," end quote. The organization will look for evidence of PCBs and other contaminants as well. According to the EPA, new data is needed to determine the best path forward. This is being done in advance of what could be formal studies that could come before a cleanup plan. EPA Regional Administrator Lisa Garcia said in a statement, and I quote, "The information will help us determine whether and how to prioritize investigations into each portion of the Lower Hudson and how to best address contamination," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the New York State Department of Public Service will hold a series of public meetings on a proposed New York State Electric and Gas Corporation rate hike. NYSEG, which provides electric services to portions of Greene and Columbia County, has requested the PSC to approve changes to annual electric and natural gas delivery rate. NYSEG is proposing to increase its electric delivery revenue by approximately $274 million, a 31% hike in base delivery revenues for the company. If approved, the rate increases would take effect on May 1, 2023. The Department of Public Service will hold a series of virtual public statement hearings on the rate hikes beginning September 15th, with hearings scheduled at 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. State residents are able to provide their comments to the PSC about rate changes. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said the county is encouraging NYSEG customers to express their opinions about the rate changes to the state agency. Groden said, and I quote, "I think when people see those numbers, they're going to say, what? Why are these things going up so much? I don't know if there's a correlation between the fact that we're pushing to more green energy, which is more expensive. There's a benefit to green energy, but now we're going to agree to pay 50% more because we're going to use solar," end quote. Additional virtual Department of Public Service hearings will take place on September 28th and October 18th at 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. each day. Last week, National Grid announced its residential natural gas customers should expect to pay an estimated $263 more on their heating bills beginning in November and continuing through the end of March. National Grid electric customers will pay approximately 22% more than last winter. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup that Central Hudson Gas and Electric is once more warning customers to prepare for higher energy supply prices as electric and natural gas prices increase again. This the company announced on September 13th. The residential price for electric supply will increase from $8.32 per kilowatt hour in August to $13.06 per kilowatt hour as of September 13th. Natural gas prices that went into effect on September 1st also increased from 87.1 cents per 100 cubic feet in August to 97.8 cents per 100 cubic feet. According to Central Hudson, the utility purchases electricity and gas from, and I quote, third-party suppliers on behalf of customers. These costs are not marked up, and Central Hudson does not profit for them, meaning customers pay the same rates as Central Hudson for the energy they use, end quote. Central Hudson says several international, national, and regional factors are contributing to this market volatility. For instance, inflation is plaguing the entire planet since the pandemic, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine has wreaked havoc on energy markets. Read the full story at Porcupine Soup. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 75 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 58 degrees. And on Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 82 degrees. And there will be a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Sunday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 62 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
And since next weekend will no longer be summer, this is the final Sandbar predictions for the year. Don't worry, though. Standard tide predictions, along with the new current strength metric, will continue for the autumn season. Water won't be going that deep, so currents both days will be light and the sandbar appearance time will be relatively brief. 3 to 4 a.m. on Saturday morning, then 2:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday afternoon. On Sunday, it shows up 4 a.m. to 5:30 a.m., then again from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Looking way up, we see geomagnetic disturbances are expected this weekend as we push through a co-rotating interaction region. Radio propagation conditions during the weekend, expect things to bounce around a bit. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet, and the current sunspot number is 71. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
On Saturday, September 17th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Tune in for the latest episode of the serial I Have Seen Niagara, this week written by Zach Tribino, with voices from Rick Royer, David Crandall, Tony Pep, and Paul Panaremko. Soundtrack by G. Lucas Crane. On the radio in the WGXC Morning Show. Then at 10 a.m., it's time to turn on the news when the spell is broken this week. At 10:30 a.m., Joshua Fried is live with Radio Wonderland. At noon on the countdown, hear new music from Columbia County's drummer Bobby Previtt, Sun Ra, and Matthew Shipp, among others. Works from Brian Eno, Claire Rousey, and Philip Jeck are on the In My Room radio show at 1 o'clock. And then the Radio Art Hour features works at 3 p.m. from Malu Zanner Oswag and Colin Black from Australia. Then we'll hear from the Wave Farm Animals at 4 p.m. on the WGXC Afternoon Show. There have been a lot of turkeys on the property this week that we'll hear about. The Framework Show returns from its summer hiatus with the London Sound Survey, Budeha Chattopadhyay, Yenting Hus, and Yannick Dubois, among others, at 6 p.m. At 8 p.m., it's time to hop on the Afrosonic Taxi with music from Ina Malja, Theus Dera, and King Cora, among others. And then it's time for the Tabs Out Show at 10 p.m. This week, Maxwell Allison from Housewell Mountain is the guest on the Cassette Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. Oh, the curtain lights. This is it. We'll hit the heights. And oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show. This is it.
Thank you.
to call me Stalin or even Mao Zedong, 'cause I'm far too young. My rising sign is Capricorn, is that surprising? You know that I was born so very soft and easygoing. I make no trouble at all. I was listening, yeah, I was listening to the devil's radio. I was listening, yeah, I was listening to the devil's radio. And it went na 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 na. I'm the devil's radio. Tentacles are bland, it's like a weevil. It burrows through the land and everybody smiles, everybody smiles. Michael, don't you know someday a spike will grow right through the woodwork and come out through your palm? We was listening, we was listening to the devil's radio. We was listening, yeah, we was listening to the devil's radio. And it went na 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 na. I'm the devil's radio. Sets on the devil. Sun sets on the west. He's listening to the FM talk show. It's what he loves the best. Talking through a bimbo, but don't touch that dial or that hateful smile. Kate said the flowers of intolerance and hatred are blooming kind of early this year. Someone's been watering them. We was listening, ah, we was listening to the devil's radio. We was listening, yeah, we was listening to the devil's radio. And it went na 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 na. Another devil's radio. Na 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 na. I'm the devil's radio.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Lemongrass. Cumin. Allspice. Grains of grain, Hermes de la Provence, and of course, garam masala. Thank you all of you for joining me for another episode of Beyond the Behind, where we take a deep look into the past to find the future, and vice versa. At the end of last week's episode, I asked you to procure a vanilla bean, 3 Logan berries, and Montreal steak seasoning, which we have here. Now, If you have those at the ready, go ahead and add them to your mortar and pestle and give them a good joining, awakening the soul of the spice. And now, as you see the ghosts rise from the bowl, inhale. Our minds and our chakras are now open, ready to receive messages from the world beyond our studio, and our phone lines are always wide open, ready for your call. Ask me, pray tell, how has the implementation of last week's lesson gone for you? Is the world reforming itself before your eyes? I am Cilantro Mahoney, and I am ready for you. Oh, and there's our first caller. Hello, my angel. Tell us all about it. What's going on?
Hello? Is this really Cilantro?
Yes, in the flesh and on your TV screen.
I finally did it.
I'm so proud of you.
And my birthmark is still here?
Big deal.
But you promised.
My child, I...
You said that if I killed the person who hurt me in my past life, my birthmark would go away. That this hairy, throbbing mass, my giant congenital nevus that covers my nose and eyes, you said, here, I wrote it down, you said, I'm a ugly, beastly freak because my body remembers what happened to me before I was me.
The spice works in mysterious ways.
No mystery. I found them. All of them, in a series of interconnected school buses buried deep in the Cave of the Winds. And I saw tapes. I saw them doing to new kids what my dreams told me they did to me. Caged, hooked up to tentacled machines, harvesting their pain and their dreams. They put the pain in the tchotchkes and dreams into squashes and sell them at the roadside stands at souvenir shops along with their pastel-colored honey. What have they done to those bees? Tourists don't understand the allure of these tchotchkes, but they'll buy. Even when they didn't think they bought them, they leave the shop and look down into their bag, and there they are staring back at them, mocking them. No returns.
So, let's talk about that birthmark.
I barely made it out alive. I burned it to the ground, or should I say, in the ground. Kids and all, no one should have to live with the kind of shit that was done to my past self. Killing everyone was better than letting one child suffer with memory.
But your birthmark persists. As we know, everyone, our bodies carry memories of past consciousnesses, of selves before we were who we are, from when we were who we were before we were us. These relics of our many existences manifest as birthmarks, and birthmarks are a living record. We are who is we are we, and vice versa. If we rid this plane of those who abused us in our past lives, these relics are whisked away like saffron in a sandstorm.
It's only gotten worse. My birthmark is growing. I lay down to sleep at night and I can feel the brown spreading. And with it, hairs bursting out of my skin like needles through leather. I'm more beast than human at this point. My hands are so dense with hair that I've somehow got fleas nested between my fingers. This birthmark is becoming me. Soon it will crawl up my neck and down my throat. So damn itchy.
Have you considered that you could have been mistaken?
Have you?
Are you in there?
Is there a disturbance.
Mayor, we know you've been hiding out in this motel for weeks.
No, I... The mayor?
Are those jars of piss on the windowsill? Pissing in jars during a jar shortage. What an animal. Officer Tony, I'm going around back. Stay here in case the mayor makes an appearance.
Okay, Sarge.
I'm the mayor.
I sense a reckoning.
I'm the mayor.
A typhoon is coming for you. You are reckless. You are worthless. You are Le Bête, birthmark or not. I hear the thoughts running through your little beast brain, and they are pitiful. Did you forget I know everything? I know who you are. I know what you have done. All politicians are animals.
I am the mayor.
You are nothing.
I'm the mayor.
If your name cannot be pronounced...
I'm the mayor with the unpronounceable name.
You should be pronounced dead.
I'm the mayor.
You are no one.
I'm the mayor.
You are no one.
I'm the mayor.
Are no one.
I'm the mayor. I'm the mayor.
Mayor. Mayor.
Hey, Sarge, you okay in there?
Get in here, Tony. You're gonna want to see this.
Oh, man.
Isn't this the beast you showed me a picture of? The one who diddled you at the circus as a kid.
That sure could be. Look, I loved that beast until I realized I was being taken advantage of.
Better call the coroner, or should we call a veterinarian? Radio's in the car. I'm going to sit here with the body. It has soft fur. Reminds me of a baby I once had a long, long time ago.
Well, sounds like we've lost our caller. If you'd like to resume our conversation, as always, just dial the number at the bottom of the screen. And a charge of $5.69 per minute will be added to your phone bill. Thank you, all of my children, for being loyal viewers of this program. We'll be back in a few minutes with today's lesson. Head to your kitchen now for some chicory and fenugreek to harness their psychic and digestive potentials. But first, a word from our wonderful sponsors.
This has been a presentation from the Psychic Network Niagara. Programming is made possible by our sponsors, Loganberry Fountain Drink, a great beverage for all living beings, and Omega Fuck Spices. For all your spice needs, try Omega Fuck brand. Featuring a full range of herbs and spices like oregano, paprika, and our most popular product, salt. Around midnight tonight, the Niagara County Coroner's Office will report that the body of the mayor with an unpronounceable name is missing. He will state that the chest freezer the body was stuffed in was blasted open from the inside, and that the steel bars in the morgue windows were bent open, and a trail of big, hairy footprints led all the way to City Hall. Tomorrow morning, everything will go back to normal, and you will not remember this episode. All government and administrative operations will function smoothly. Reports will go in, reports will go out, budgets will be considered, and fines will be levied or dismissed. The beast must live on. The beast is necessary. Without the beast, our city will spiral into chaos and despair. Viva Le Bête! This is the real lesson of the day. Bergamot and Chives, on the count of three, go.
You gotta try something. You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
September 15th is the beginning of Hispanic Heritage Month. And what's taking place in Hudson this weekend is a festival to celebrate that. Joining me now is Elvia Garcia, the community organizer from Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Welcome.
Hi, so thank you for having us. Yes, I'm super excited to share with y'all a little bit about our event this weekend.
Wonderful. I'm so excited for it. And we've had Columbia County Sanctuary Movement on our program pretty regularly. Before we get into the logistics for the event, Hispanic heritage, can you talk about the term Hispanic and why does it start at the 15th and go to the 15th?
Yeah, I think Hispanic Heritage Month really celebrates Hispanic people, and this incorporates tons of countries, not only from Latin America. So I think really it's a time to celebrate the amazing Hispanic community that we have across the world, across our country. So I think for the month of September, it's really just a time to be able to recognize the amazing people, the amazing food, the amazing music, our culture that we've brought, and we can share with our communities.
So this weekend, the 17th of September in Hudson, what's taking place?
Yeah, so this weekend, we are going to have our second annual Latinx Festival, which is going to be in Hudson. So first, we're going to start with a parade, and that's going to be at 1 p.m. So I think a big thing that we're celebrating not only during Hispanic Heritage Month is really just about countries celebrating our country's Independence Day. There's a lot of Latin American countries that are celebrating their Independence Days. This parade is really a way to celebrate the countries that we come from and the amazing people that are part of our communities. So we start off with a parade, and that's going to be at 1 p.m. And then we're going to move into a festival, which is right here at the Hudson Riverfront Park. That's from 2 to 6. We're going to have music. We're going to have food. We're going to have activities for the kids, everything. And then right when you think that the party is done, from 7 to 11, we have an after party at the Hudson Brewery later that night.
Wonderful. And I know the musical talent is fantastic. One of them is Taina Asili, who is a regular at the Sanctuary. Can you talk about the performers?
Yeah, of course. We have different varieties of music this year. We have different dances, musical groups. We have, just to name a few, you mentioned Taina Asili. She's a powerful artist. We also have mariachis, which is such a staple for Hispanic and the Mexican communities. We have Andes Manta, who is, they're more folklore music. And so it's just a different variety of music that represent different countries, which is amazing.
It is interesting how food and music, it really touches all these different senses, and how culture is not just about the fact, and part of those traditions really incorporate these various senses. Do you have a memory where, like, certain foods or certain musics just trigger a certain cultural connection for you?
Oh my God, yes. I think that what is so beautiful about, like, a lot of our cultures is that there is a lot of similarities. And so although sometimes there is some differences, like I'm Mexican, so I love like fresh fruits, elotes, which bring back such amazing memories from when I'm in Mexico or when I'm eating like plantains, plátanos, like I know like, oh my God, that is going to be specific to mi gente in Puerto Rico or in Dominican Republic. Like I can like go back to those places where I have like certain memories and be like, oh my God, yes, these are my people, this is my culture, and like it's so beautiful. I love it. So hopefully we can do that this year. When y'all join us at the park, you guys are like, oh my God, I remember this from my country or when I went on vacation here. It's going to be hopefully a mini vacation.
What is your favorite aspect about your culture that you like to share with non-Hispanic people?
Yeah, I think honestly, community. Community is huge in our Hispanic culture. We love to dance. We love to celebrate. And I think you're really going to be able to see that at this event. We're really going to show out. We also love to, like, you know, just like have a good time. So I think one of the things that I take back from like any of my events that I do, or like any community event, any like even family event, is just like how connected you really feel. And we're hoping to bring that back to folks during this festival, is like really showing that community, making sure that like everyone feels welcomed as well. Because I know when I go to certain events, sometimes I'm a little scared to go if I don't know anybody, but I think just that welcomeness is what we're striving for, because it's just like a big family hug. That's how I like to describe events that I go to. Yeah.
So you work for Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. I'd love to talk just briefly about what your organization does and why celebrating culture is so important.
Yeah, of course. So Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is based right here in Hudson, New York. We're an organization that is made to defend, empower, and support our immigrant communities, specifically here in Columbia County, but also the Capital Region. We work on campaigns, we provide services, and one of the reasons why we also wanted to do such a big, beautiful community event is because we know that a lot of the times that we work through and with some very serious institutions. And sometimes the news that we work through or we have to work with is a little bit hard and a little bit difficult. So we want to also recognize that community and celebration is also a great part of being part of the sanctuary movement. We want to celebrate beautiful times as well. So the Latinx Festival was also part of, you know, just trying to build community and the work that we also do. We also have community members that have been dreaming about this festival for years. This is the second time that we've been doing this. One of our co-founders it was his dream for so many years to be able to be a part of this or put something on like this. So it really is just so amazing that we were finally able to get the means to be able to put something together like this.
Wonderful. So for listeners who are interested in attending this day of celebration, 1 p.m. is the parade, 2 to 6 is the music and food, 7 to 11, the after party. All of this takes place on September 17th in Hudson, New York. Is there anything I left out?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it. If you guys want to know some more information, definitely check out our Facebook, Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, or our website, ColumbiaCountySanctuary.org, and we hope to see you there.
Thank you so much, Elvia Garcia, for joining us on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.